Alright, time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. So I guess we'll do some comments, but I don't know, I'm thinking about it. I think I'll just go over a couple of subjects as context to the comments, sort of, maybe kind of. And, alright, so the curious thing about levers, I mean, I think interesting. You know, all this stuff is stuff you never really think about until you do this, this over-analyzing, you'd almost say, is that if, say if I had I put a two mass here and a two mass here, it's kind of obvious, okay, that those two things are equal, just extend the lever so we know that the lever's longer than the two things. And there's not really going to be an issue. It's just going to be kind of like the Newton's cradle, okay, where you take, steel ball, hit steel ball, and all of the energy is conserved in the sense that all the energy this has, 100% of it, essentially, very close to, leaves with this other object. But if I hit a lighter object into a heavier object, okay, so if I have a little one and I smash it in, now it has the same, it has momentum. We could argue it has the same momentum as this has, but it's not going to get the same result because it's going to end up bouncing off. But momentum will be conserved. So all the physicists will say that, yes, these are elastic collisions because all the momentum is conserved. That is, we can see it, okay, in terms of linear motion, okay? So it has a vector in a direction that we can see. It hasn't been converted. It hasn't broken this object. Wasn't made out of glass or something. Didn't break it. Didn't deform it. Didn't misshape it. Okay, everything that went in came out. So unlike unelastic, which would be something that deforms or something that gets hot or something that does something else to absorb the energy. So 100% isn't transferred either this way or this way. So if you add up this way and you add up this way in an inelastic collision, you're not going to get 100%. You're going to get something less. Now you could do that to a lever. I could put a one mass here, and now I don't have a balance. So if I drop the one mass here with a two mass here, I'll have the same problem. I'll end up bouncing off the lever, the one mass will bounce instead of getting all of its energy into the two mass, and the two mass will go up, less than it would have. Okay, so it'll get like 60%, and this will get 40%. Now, it'll still be inelastic. I mean, it'll still be elastic as long as you make the lever out of something that doesn't deform or get hot or do some other kind of silly crap to absorb the energy. All right, so what you're really doing is trying to find the balance. So you say, okay, if I put the one mass here, that equals the two mass. And so essentially I've restored this circumstance. I've got them dead equal, okay, by putting a one mass two notches out, okay, of distance. I've balanced the two. The two, this side can't really tell the difference. Well, it's not like it can't really tell. It can't tell. You couldn't tell. Nobody could tell. It's not tellable. There's no way to see from this side that there's a two mass here. Two mass here or a one mass out here. There's no way to tell the difference. So it'll behave exactly as if you converted this into this. Okay, you made this an equality again. And so now you can expect the right result of being able to conserve all of the energy and get 100% and get it in the way you want it, which is you want a complete transfer. So now you can drop this and get 100%, okay, close to it, of the energy to go here, okay, and no bounce back, no reflections, no springs, no bullshit. All right, so that's a detail I think is important. Now I made another video where I sort of explained about springs and other kinds of mechanisms, and the trick is that you can compress, you can put the energy in at any speed. You can push the spring in really fast or you can push the spring really slow, and it's just about how much pressure you're creating. But the expansion doesn't work that way. It isn't the same argument, because you have a high pressure, okay, and it just gets lower and lower, okay, as the spring expands. A little bit of compression in the spring doesn't produce the same speed, okay, as a high compression. So as the elastic object expands, it doesn't expand with the same amount of pressure, because at each location the pushing pressure is lower. So this is a problem, because this means that lighter objects are going to get less of the energy back, because they're sort of going to start going faster than the pressure that being applied by the spring. They're going to gain a velocity at some point in the expansion before the complete expansion, where the slow object kind of guarantees that it's going to get all of the expansion, because it's never going to outrun the expansion. It's never going to, this decline here, it's never going to go faster than the smallest compression of the spring. So whatever the speed is of the smallest compression of the spring, if the object's going slower than that, it's guaranteed to get 100% of the energy in the spring, where the lighter object is going to get some other percentage. Perhaps 70, perhaps 80. Who knows? Depends on the object. Now, the fact is, it's still going to go faster because it's lighter and all that kind of crap, but it's not going to get as much of the energy. So this is a key, this is a big problem in terms of finding the right storage device that's capable of delivering at the same, at a more consistent speed. So I've sort of pointed out, like an explosion, you're sort of guaranteed, because the explosion creates a very, the elements of the explosion are all moving at a very fast speed. You're getting really just getting hit by little tiny particles moving very, very fast. So anything you hit is going to be bigger than those particles, so to speak, and it's never going to be going faster than them. So it's guaranteed to sort of get hit by everything. Everything the explosion produces, you can't really outrun it. No part of the explosion will you be outrunning. So therefore, you won't miss any of the energy. Like even magnets are sort of a problem, because you have a very small amount of space to work with. That is, you have to compress a very small space, and within a very small space. And it is also, by this rule, R squared kind of rules, where it declines rapidly. I mean, gets stronger going this way, the compression, and weaker as you go out. So you're getting, again, less speed with that initial push into the magnet, and it gets faster and faster as you push deeper into the magnet. The pressure is higher and higher. So, I don't think I've ever seen a physics lecture or anybody ever talk about these issues. So, that's part of this whole story, is the incompleteness of any conversation. Even the friction argument, there's so little conversation about what's really happening when something's rolling across a surface. And, what's going to happen depending on what speed I'm going, and the realities of a surface and how energy is imposed into the surface. And I would have the argument that friction is clearly very biased against slow things. Slow things have much more contact per square foot, a surface, and therefore are losing energy much quicker than fast things. So this is, in my opinion, good physics, good, these are good subjects for conversation, and yet you can't find it among the human race. Nobody wants to talk about any of this, okay, as part of the physical reality. I really have to erase that just to say anything more, but I don't know if there's anything more I want to say in this at this point. So a little pause. Alright, a little side note before we get to comments, I guess, is I did find a scale in the garbage. Yay, for free. So, see, you wait and you get rewarded. So, nice analog spring scale. So it might be good for launching, might be good for receiving, but again, it has the same limitation, is that I would sort of argue that if somebody did a real slow motion test, the speed that the scale moves when I compress it a small amount is lower than than the speed it moves when I compress it a large amount. And if those velocities are different, and I think they are, that's a problem. You know, in terms of attempting to do an experiment where you're going to create an equal amount of energy and impose it on objects equally. So again, I might have to use gravity to, you know, create equal, known velocities, reliable velocities. But the great thing about gravity is it does take what it, you know, gives back what it takes. So if you put a lever in gravity, the weight of the lever becomes irrelevant. Now, if I have a lever sideways and I do things, well, now the weight of the lever is more relevant because gravity isn't going to give me back the fact that I had to move the mass of the lever. So these are, you know, that's another interesting subject. You know, you'd have to have the lever on springs so the springs can give back the energy, but then in the springs are, you're again suspect because a little bit of pressure doesn't move the lever as quickly as a lot of pressure. So there's all kinds of little subtle bits to this that do have to be accounted for. And blah, blah. You can't, you know, it's just not as, you know, it's not as simple as I wish it was. But clearly the part that is simple is the fact that they don't have any evidence for these dramatic statements. That it takes 4 times more gas to go twice as fast. That's a dramatic statement the kinetic energy theory makes. And it's, you know, the fact that there's zero evidence of that. And, you know, the fact that you don't see it in your reality anywhere. Sort of a just, it's just a really good giveaway that this is not good physics. All right, so polylogic. I don't really get the name, but whatever. I thought Franklin was coming around to agreeing with you after doing his test in his latest video. Well, he was. But he's agreeing with me for the wrong reason, so that's what I was pointing out. So I guess maybe you're taking my response as if he's still being hostile to my point. But no, he was agreeing with me, but I knew he was agreeing with me for the wrong reason, so I knew that wasn't a real agreement. I guess it's just hard for people to imagine that something so widespread and apparently basic could have been left unchecked all this time. Yes, it's just widespread. It's not apparently basic to me at all. So if you think V squared is, you know, apparently basic, I say that's apparently crap. I mean, it's just a glaring statement saying, what, velocity squared? How do you square velocity? I mean, how could velocity be, how could it be relevant in the universe? Velocity is not a dimension. You can't, you know, you can't multiply the sides. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense, a velocity squared. So I wouldn't use the term apparently basic. But anyway, could have been left unchecked all this time. It's frankly disturbing. Well, yeah, that's, you know, I've been disturbed by bad physics since I was a kid, okay? I mean, again, that whole drawing of the photon as these two snakes traveling through space, that was disturbing, frankly, because it's just unaccountable. There's no explanation for where all this complexity could possibly exist in something so elemental as a frickin' photon of light. It can't be that complicated. Yes, disturbing indeed. TNQ. I don't know what that means. I don't think Todd is terribly supportive, so I think this is, I don't know what his point is, but whatever. We'll move on. All right. So this is somebody who's just going to try to nitpick in what they say, so, but yeah, whatever. This is what people do. Regarding levers again, it's an interesting point and should be explored further. Yeah, I'm the only one doing any exploration, okay? So I can't get a single other person to discuss how levers work. Nobody will do it. Nobody. They won't even do it in comments. They won't do it anywhere. They won't provide any insight whatsoever into the fact that levers just convert momentums. And if you think they're doing something, and again, by their theory, they're free energy devices. And everybody would have to just concede that's what a lever is. I jump on it, okay, with a heavy mass, all right? and I put a lighter mass further out on the lever, and I'm making free energy. That's the on the other side of the lever. That's the truth. So if I put a little kid on one side of a teeter-totter, and I jump on the teeter-totter the other side, you know, near the fulcrum, I am going to shoot him into free energy bliss. He'll be extra energied. Yeah. But I just thought of another possible issue. The weight is hitting the lever at an angle. Yes. So obviously you can compensate for that by just putting a little hinge in. Okay, so no matter which way the weight hits, it has a center and it, you know, it'll be on its own little suspension. And so, you know, then it could throw things straight up and land straight down. Obviously the lever is going to be on an arc, so it'll shoot things, you know, that way, and it won't land back on the lever again. So you do have to compensate for those things, but they're easy to compensate for. This may cause the lever damage to the lever over time. Well, we wouldn't care about that, okay? I mean, if you have a free energy machine, you're not really going to be too upset that you have to, you know, put a new aluminum bar in that costs you 53 cents every 4 weeks or something. You know, it's making you zillawatts of free energy. I mean, you're really not going to worry about, oh, I had to put a dollar's worth of aluminum into it. Ooh. And as the weight goes back up, it's going to swing slightly. I don't even know what that means, but whatever. It doesn't really matter. The point is that you can make the lever, you can fix any variables that might be causing irregularity. So you can fix it to make it more regular. All right, without compromising. You're getting free energy, you know. So if I reduce, you know, if I make a couple of changes that absorb a tiny fraction of the energy, like 2%, it's not going to bother you any. Okay, it's all free. All right, so I'll give you 97% free energy instead of 100%. Anyway, the only thing that gets in the way of the argument. So again, there's, you know, there's nothing in the way of the argument. The theory is sound. It's been used for thousands of years. Balances have been around for thousands of years. And this phenomenon has been used by human beings for thousands of years. And the kinetic energy says the lever was always a free energy device, when clearly it's just a conversion device. You convert one form of energy into another form of energy in the sense of torque, you know, versus velocity. The fulcrum versus the size and weight of the long arm itself. So the long arm, you know, strictly speaking, you would make the same length of arm on both sides, and all you're really doing is changing the positions of the weights on that same arm. So if you have the same arm, you've canceled any effects of the two sides of the arm. And again, in gravity, you've canceled it entirely. Any motion in the arm you get back, because the other side is going to do exactly the opposite. When you push one side down, the other side's going up, so it's storing the energy again. So any kinetic energy in the system is automatically storing energy on the other side. And also, what would this setup be made out of? You know, what, see, this is just such baby talk. Titanium. No. I mean, the obvious choices would be something like aluminum, all right? Light and very inelastic. Okay. Very elastic in the sense that it doesn't bend very well. It just breaks. All right. If it's wood, it's going to wobble. But you would maybe get some of that with metal too. So again, there really isn't any problem with levers working. I lifted a sidewalk, okay, in front of my house with a lever. A big giant hunk of concrete, okay? I don't know how much, you know, 4 feet by 4 foot hunk of concrete, and I lifted it up with a lever. They work. But just the, you know, people just are going to just, you know, the naysaying, the nitpicking. It's just This is just, God, why don't people, they ought to just wear t-shirts. I'm a nitpicking, naysaying butthole. I mean, everybody's just such a jackass. Anyway, what's the explanation for blue shifted astronomical objects? So I don't really like changing subjects much, but this was on the subject of Franklin's conversation about the function of waves. So it is relevant, but we have to go back to the other subject. So the catches. So there's the conventional physics says that space is being created. But it and all they're really saying is that other forces can counter for the space creation. So somehow gravity, like between the sun and the earth, there isn't any increase in distance because somehow the gravity between the earth and the sun is compensating for it. Well, it can't really. It can only overcome it. So then you have to say that all of your gravitational figures are way off if you're saying they're overcoming this production of space. So there's so many. I mean, it makes such... their stories are so full of... They're just so full of shit. I just don't know how you buy anything of this crap. Well, anyway. The blue shifted objects that they see in space are not distant objects. And they're not moving preposterously insane speed. So they're moving fractions of the speed of light. Not 3/4 of the speed of light or something. So they're moving towards us much slower than the objects redshifted. So the redshifted objects that are, say, 7 billion light years away, those objects are moving half the speed of light. And the ones 13 billion light years away are moving even faster, some of them, than the speed of light, which is really idiotic. The redshift is so substantial. Okay, so that should be understood, is that anything blue shifted isn't blue shifted. So the red shift is like this big. The blue shifted objects are like this much. So it is a physical fact that the blue shifted objects are actually moving towards us, would be the explanation. So that the blue shift can be explained as just being, yes, it's moving towards us faster, okay, than the amount of the red shift from its distance, because it isn't that far away. And so because it's close, it's not redshifted very much by going through the oxygen molecules, as I would argue, in space, the hydrogen molecules, the hydrogen atoms. So it's hitting hydrogen atoms as, you know, the light, as it's going through space and slowly but surely getting its frequency expanded. That expansion at a close distance is tiny, and so you see the real velocity of the object in the sense that its velocity relative to us, and relative to us, it's moving towards us, and therefore it's blue shifted. Or we're moving towards it, right? It's blue shifted either way. Either we're moving towards it, or it's moving towards us. But the fact is the two objects are getting closer. Which one's moving doesn't matter. It's going to be blue shifted no matter if it's moving towards us or we're moving towards it. Either way, it's going to look the same. All right, so that should always be pointed out, that, you know, whatever they say, the Andromeda galaxy is moving towards us. It's going to, you know, and they say it's heading towards us. Well, no, we're heading towards it. You know, could be the right answer. So anyway, so the blue shift doesn't need to be explained because it's not anything in any kind of proportion similar to the red shift that everything has, and that distance is completely correlated to the redshift, where there's no correlation with the blue shifted objects, except we don't see any distant blue shifted objects. Okay. I think it would be valuable to get your take on a video called Ellipsoids and the Bizarre Behavior of Rotating Bodies. So it's a weird title, just because they're really talking about that whatever Russian guy effect. So you spin, you know, in no atmosphere or gravity, you spin an object off of a bolt and it rotates off and flies through space still rotating, and then it flips, you know, so the bolt switches and then it rotates and then it flips, and it flips back and forth. And the idea that there's obviously some sort of resident, okay, frequencies that are, you know, that they have a point every, you know, that there's an event taking place where two events are happening, and every now and then the two events converge, and when those two events converge, they cause the flip. So there's a I could pause to think of the stupid word, but ellipsoid, that's not the word I'm looking for though. There's a procession, okay, in how something's spinning. So it spins this way, and then it spins that way out again, and then it spins back inside. So it's like it's big on this side, and there's a line that goes here, and then there's a line that goes here, and these sides are rotating. So it has a little rotation here, it has a big rotation here, and the two of them swing and go the opposite way. And that's happening in more than one dimension. So it's also spinning in this way and spinning this way. And every now and then, the two spins do this. Okay, they're both up at the same time. And that causes the whole thing to flip. So that would be something like an argument. Now, in the video he's mentioning, they're using abstractions, okay, where they say, this is the energy of the rotating body. And so they do it by momentum's theory, and they get a obloid that would look like that. And then if they do it by kinetic energy, they get a bigger, obviously, profile of an egg or something. And the two eggs don't match, and they're saying that the parts that don't match have some relevance to this thing. But you could use any other object to compare it with. So I would argue that they could have just used a perfect circle and then put their energy, the fact is that the energy on one side is obviously is doing this on one side and this on the other side. By kinetic energy, the little motion is going to have more energy than the big motion. And so it's going to be an opposite curve. But if you just compare it to any other curve, I mean, like I said, a perfect circle, you'd still have the bits left over that'd be exactly the same, essentially. And that would be your explanation, is that when you have bits all in the same, from the three dimensions, you have irregularity in this dimension, you have irregularity going this way, and you have irregularity going this way, when those three are all in the same quadrant, they're all in this quarter of, or this sixth of the up-down universe, then it flips to the other side. So it's almost like a magnetic field flipping. So there's lots of other probably analogies. But I would just say to you, it's a really complex subject. And, I'm trying to get to some basic truth. Now, this is hardly a good proof for the kinetic energy theory because, again, they didn't prove it at all. They didn't show any direct correlation or any direct proof that the numbers they got were exactly relevant to when it flips or any of that. So it was just some notion that this provides information. But I would argue that they could have done the same thing with a perfect circle as the thing they're comparing it to, and they would have gotten the same results. That would be my answer to you. But it really is, do you think there's any real point in getting into new subjects like that? So this was really off the subject, okay? This is on the subject in the sense that this is a real bogus stretch to say that this has anything to do with kinetic energy versus momentum. I mean, kinetic air is strictly made up. There's no hope that it has any connection to any physical reality. MV squared was garbage, complete garbage. It can't possibly have any relevance anywhere because it's just a fantasy. It's a fable. All right. Take a little pause. Alright, so we have the, useless comment. E equals MC squared and such. So what do you really think? How do you really think that works? Why, if E does equal MC squared, why does it? Okay, why would the speed of light be squared? What would be the significance of squaring the absolute velocity? And, I would argue that if you give it more thought, you might figure out that what is this statement really saying is that the energy of any piece of mass, so that's the M part. So now we're saying, what's the energy of the M part, right? what we're saying is multiply times c squared. Okay, so it's the matter that matters. And so what I could argue is that I have a space full of BBs, a box, and the BBs are, you know, perpetually motioned. Okay, they always go 50 miles an hour, and they're bouncing off the surfaces 100% elastically. And I have that box, and I put any material object inside the box. What's going to happen inside that box? Well, every single little BB is now going to have more energy, because I've taken away the space in which it can function. So in a sense, mc squared is sort of just saying that matter represents an occupation of space, and the space has the energy in it. Not the mass. The mass isn't the energy. The mass is a size taking up space. And when it takes up space, it causes everything else in the universe to have all the energy in the universe to have less space to function in. And therefore, it's going to bounce around more distance in the other space available. You've taken essentially space away, and now it has to be more energetic in the space that's left. So I could argue it's answering a different question. It's saying how much force is there per square inch in the universe. It's giving you that answer. It's telling you how much energy is in what we call empty space, the average hunk of extra empty space. So anyway, so again, another, you think it's this simple.
Equals mc squared, there, we're done.
Yeah, sorry. Wrong answer. All right, so this is sort of a complimentary comment, so we might just... All right, Franklin keeps repeating himself and doesn't listen to every video. Does this guy actually care? Well, that's a good question. He likes to make things fun, you know. He's just, yeah, he's not exactly... Doesn't take it all, anything too seriously, I guess is what you would say. He's sort of enjoying his life kind of thing. You get your points across to some of the viewers by doing this, I guess, and I have learned a lot from your videos. Thank you. Yeah, I just don't know how to do it in some other way, but to try to be responsive. But it all does get redundant, and it is a lot of things, and, you know, it has a lot of, you know, waste, you know, in these videos that I'd like to take out of the video. So I'm going to work on that. Just really pointed subjects, I guess. Where are the rest of the comments? Any comments on the black hole picture released today? Yeah, my comment is it's bullshit again. It's exactly the same fucking process they used for the first picture. So it's completely useless as science, frankly, in my opinion. It's not a photograph. They call it a real photograph, a real time. That was actually in the headline, real time photograph. And he's like, no, it isn't. It's not even close. You know, it's completely manufactured. It's already been sort of outed, you know, that their whole filtering process is, does this data look like a black hole? Yes. Okay, we keep it. Does this piece look like a black hole? No, we don't keep it. I mean, it's that bad. So, you know, they manufactured the image. Anyway. So I thought there was some other comment, but apparently they're not here. I don't think there's anything in the old held for review section that's of any value. Oh, okay, there's a couple more. Paralogic. Let's see. Do you think No, I already did that. A physical meaning of the squared. Yes, okay. So, yes, that's just it's just a replacement for. All right, so these are old comments. All right, this guy says, there's a theory like yours that the links to some guy just talking, essentially doing Lesage gravity, and he says there's a bunch of hydrogen something or other in the universe moving the speed of light. Obviously, there's no hydrogen moving the speed of light. There's no atoms or molecules or matter moving the speed of light. So, I mean, obviously, it's not a theory just like mine. A lot like mine. It's just Lesage gravity and another bad version of it. You got to say more than it's push gravity, okay, or particle gravity. There's a lot to explain. So... And they don't come close to explaining any of that. And I have. I've know, I provided an answer 10 years ago that was like this guy's answer. It was really incomplete, all right? But the answer I have now of the fact that the force is actually causing what we call heat, and the heat is actually an absorption of energy, and that means that when something's getting hot, you're moving the atoms inside of it, the electrons and the protons, you're using up energy in the universe by moving those pieces of matter. That explanation is really so much better than my original efforts at explaining push gravity. All right, but anyway, doesn't really matter. I mean, the fact that my arguments and the precision of my model gets better over time, that seems reasonable. All right, so anyway, so where else to go? I don't know if I bother reading a Brozo comment. It's just they're so bad. I'll think about it. All right, well, we'll do it. What the hell? Do some of it anyway. I mean, everything this asshole says is bullshit. So anyway, he says, Franklin, I'm no expert. Now, on this particular subject of gravity and the fact that you have to go four times the distance to get twice the velocity, he should be an expert by now, right? This is a guy who took such advantage of the fact that I made a mistake in one of my videos. So one of my videos, I was really way off. And I was making the argument that, no, you only go twice as high to get twice the velocity. It was just wrong. Completely wrong. And they won't let me live that down. So he's an expert on this subject already. Must be, right? I mean, they made so much out of this. How could he not be fully aware? It's an absolute fact that to double the velocity, you have to go four times higher in the gravity. It's an absolute fact. All right, he knows it. Why is he playing this game? I'm no expert in this, but I'm quite sure that merely placing the car twice as high only increases the velocity by 1.4. Well, I'm not even sure that's true, that the 1.4 number is actually right. You have to quadruple the height of the drop. It might be 1.3, actually, but anyway. And of the drop to double the velocity. Okay. And then he says, exactly the same as Emile du Chatelet had to quadruple the height. She didn't do any of that, okay? It was the other guy's experiment, okay? She just duplicated another guy's experiment. So let's understand that first. She just illustrated his experiment. All right. So this wasn't something she knew. Anyway, of the ball to drop to achieve twice the speed of it displacing the clay. So the dishonesty here is Stephen Bro tried to duplicate her experiment and couldn't do it. So he couldn't duplicate her results that drew the conclusion that, you know, energy was mv squared. Not one-half mv squared, mv squared. That's what Emily de Chatelet proved, was that, you know, her experiments proved, okay, that it was mv squared. That is, the number of joules was twice as the number that we say it is today. So she was way off. Not a little bit off, way the fuck off. 50% error, all right? So here he is, you know, glorifying experiments that were at least 50% off in their answer. At least 50% off in their answer. Gigantic errors. So which is it, Brozo? Do you think she was right? Her experiments were correct? Or do you think the modern one-half mv squared is correct? Which one are you arguing in defense of, you shit for brain? I mean, this fucking hypocrisy of this cunt. Oh, sorry, women, but damn it. This skanky butthole. All right, anyway. Hopefully one of the qualified commenters. Why, how are any of these commenters qualified? How exactly have any of them demonstrated they have any credentials at all? I mean, just amazing. Will chime in and correct me if I'm wrong. Okay, so obviously this is really not a disputable. Okay, Franklin just didn't realize, blah, blah, blah. Obviously it's a mistake I have made, he made the mistake. But I'm quite certain even Gary already agrees that the height has to be 4 times greater, not 2 times greater, to achieve 2x the velocity. Right, so you can't argue it's twice the velocity. This so-called 1.4 thing, so this really isn't the 1.4 thing. Okay, it really isn't. All right, that the 1.4 thing is your explanation that I can't push something with twice the force twice as fast. That somehow I can, even though I use twice as much energy, effort, I'm only going to get 0.4 more velocity out of it. So even though I use twice as much force, twice as much momentum, I only got 0.4. I lost 0.6 of what I was supposed to get. Somehow 0.6 disappeared somewhere of my energy. It got lost. It disappeared. It's the 10-ton train thing, losing so much energy. All right, that Gary also harps about, claiming this is something me and Pirro invented. Well, show me somebody else saying it. Is that too much of a fucking burden for you? Could you please show me Professor Lewin saying 1.4? Could you show one video where he said, yeah, it's 1.4 thing. Yeah, you lose the energy. 0.6 of the energy disappears. You can't throw a bowling ball, an 8-pound ball that weighs half as much as a 16-pound ball. You can't throw it twice as fast. You can only throw it 1.4 as fast. Where does Professor Lewin or any other physics professor say that shit for brain? Of course you and Pirro invented it. It's merely the square root of 2. Yeah, which has relevance how? Explains what? Explains somehow the square root of 2 means you can't throw an 8-pound bowling ball twice as fast as a 16-pound ball. Oh, that proves it? And every single experiment I have laboriously conducted in the sloppiest, dirtiest, filthiest manner possible, with the crappiest visuals possible, at the crappiest angles possible. Oh, amazing. As exactly as possible. Okay, possible for what? A chimpanzee? Over a year ago. So yeah, so he's still claiming his old shitty videos, okay, that are grotesquely flawed, logically, physically, environmentally. I mean, even the rulers are flawed. To establish this has shown it to be correct. So just such a bullshit statement to sit there and keep trying to defend the horrible nonsense and the contradictory answers he gets in his videos. All right, i.e. one experiment I did last year launched 2 carts, 2-to-1 ratio, say 1 kilogram and 2. I can't recall specifically right now. I think it was 2 and 4, asshole. So I remember his videos better than him. Using a very precise release mechanism, says you. So it's just described as the very precise release mechanism that we never got to see, never had any hope of knowing exactly how he compressed the spring or how he released the spring or any of that crap. Employing high-quality aircraft-grade springs. Well, it doesn't really matter how well they're made if they're made wrong for the circumstance you're using them in. So you could have a military-made slinky, but it wouldn't be a great spring to launch your carts with. I measured the speed electronically down to 1/10,000th of a second over a short distance. So again, he thinks because the counter goes to 1/10,000th of a second that his measuring triggers are 1/10,000th, that they're just as precise as the measuring stopwatch. So saying, go! Yeah, my stopwatch is 1/10,000th of a second. Stop! Yeah, that maybe I haven't thrown a little bit of error into that number now. Shit, he's just such an idiot. The average and average the results of about a dozen well-documented runs. So let's understand, he did 5 runs, you know, measuring objects going into springs and measuring how far they compressed them. And he didn't record the results of any of the runs. And he used a piece of clay, so whatever run went the furthest is the only one he recorded. All the other runs were irrelevant, so they were never averaged. None of that ever took place. So this is the idiot who thinks he does things well, and he's well documented. Obviously, that's the worst way. There's no point in doing more than one. There's no point in me rolling dice 10 times if I'm only going to observe the ones where the dice rolled outside of a circle I drew on the ground or something. If that's the only standard. So once you push the clay a certain distance, all the ones that go short of that distance will never be recorded as results. So all you're doing is saying, this is the one that pushed the piece of clay the furthest. So you're not averaging anything, and all the other results are irrelevant. And he's too stupid to understand that certain, you know, that little bit of mythology or whatever, methodology in performing experiments. That these are the kind of things you have to use your brain and be a little bit logical. But he can't do that. And the result was spot on 1.4, blah, blah, blah. It was something like 1.409. Except for all the other experiments I didn't video. Okay, again, I can't recall offhand. So he can't recall, but he puts down a number like that. Anyway, but the video is still up. Yeah, all your rotten, crappy, shitty videos are still up, and they all make outrageous claims that are not in their video. So he has two videos calling, saying he proved, okay, he debunked, okay, somebody else's theory. And his results were, his prediction was just as far from the prediction that he claimed he debunked. The results were just as far away. So what he basically did was prove a new theory. So the old, my theory was 1, his theory was 1.4, and he got 1.2. And he calls that a debunk. That's how dishonest this person is. I mean, he's so fucking dishonest that he'll call that debunking. All right. I mean, it's pathetic that I have to even... Shouldn't that be the end of this conversation? Is that he has videos up that are so dishonest and so exaggerated in terms of the claims made. Why should I have to even respond to anything this asshole says? And he says all of this crap in a simple experiment, you know, where he should just be saying... he's claiming he's proven all of this science, and he hasn't proven anything, except he can't do experiments very well. All right, Gary then complained that the launch spring had been in the wrong place. I complained that I couldn't see it, I had no idea how you were doing it, and obviously I complained because, yes, this is sort of important. You know, whether or not the two carts are actually going the speed you claim is sort of important. Because I had it attached to the cart itself, forming part of the total mass. I claimed that the spring has, you know, I made logical arguments, okay, frankly, about whether or not you can demonstrate any kind of proof that you know whether the spring, how much it can be compressed and how quickly it can impose energy. And you didn't seem to be at all interested in the subject. And to me, that just demonstrates more that you just don't care about these facts. That if it's a fact that springs don't give back the energy as variably, okay, as you can put it into them. That you can put it in sort of like a, I don't know. I have to find an analogy, okay, for another storage device that doesn't really allow you to decide how quickly you want to take the energy out. The spring just won't let you do it in some it will let you take it out in little pieces, okay, as long as you can accept getting the energy in little tiny jolts of small velocity. But if you're trying to get it all at once, it doesn't all at once very well. All right. We'll do one more paragraph. Just call it a day. So as usual, I repeat the entire experiment with... So let's understand. He did the air track experiment, and he couldn't get it to work elastically. That is, without springs. Okay, just metal against metal, which completely conserves all the energy. So there's no way any of the energy is lost when the metal hits the metal. It either goes this way or it goes that way, but it's always conserved. So metal on metal is Newton's cradle. The energy is conserved, so you should still be able to find it and see it. But he couldn't make that work. Okay, so, you know, he certainly couldn't get the total kinetic energy that he was getting out when he put springs in. So this argument really is about how springs function. They've now reduced the argument to springs. Somehow springs are free energy devices. They're essential for the Lewin experiment to work. Without the springs, it doesn't work. Somehow the springs make the extra energy. Okay. So as usual, I repeat the entire experiment with the springs now fixed to the wall. So he's going into all this minutiae and detail. For what purpose? Okay, it made absolutely no difference. Correction, it came out something like 3.99. Well, anyway, I'm guessing because... Oh, so he doesn't even remember his own experiments. Okay, anyway, figures in my head, but the results were so accurate for an amateur experiment. You know, they exactly how most amateur experiments, they confirm your bias. So yes, you did a confirmation bias experiment. Repeatable by anyone, yes, willing to make the same effort. No, they would be willing to make a better effort. All right. Then I'm unlikely to forget just how close the results were each time. So again, that's why he's doing it over again. It's because he's so confident he did it right the first time. Oh yeah, I wonder about that. Anyway, yeah, there's no point. No, he just keeps glorifying what are garbage experiments, and some of them are so overtly lies. I mean, again, to say he debunked anything. My prediction, 1. His prediction, 1.4. His result, 1.2. And he says he debunked me. It's just such a gross lie. He debunked himself just as much. Put that in the title of your video. I just debunked my own theory. Title the video that, you dishonest, lying sack of smelly, dirty, rotten shit. Okay. Anyway, enough. So, yeah, I don't know what he's doing now. I have no idea what he's going to ever publish anything ever again or what. You know, he played with the air track. So he made 2 new air tracks. Somehow he broke them. They don't work. You can't get it to whatever. So I guess we're not going to have any air track experiments. And frankly, there are some flaws in the function of air tracks. They're not perfect for the job. You can make the same arguments about rolling carts too. So you really do have to engineer a very careful experiment, and you know, maybe ideally in a vacuum. NASA astronauts already should have done all this stuff because they have the perfect environment, right? I mean, they can get rid of both the atmosphere and gravity. But anyway, friction. Till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. Look at this. It's going on about Jabberwocky. He goes on his little personal little bullshit stories. Oh, god damn. Let's see what this says. Without telling you my life story on this matter, suffice to say that Gary is not being as honest as you. So, again, he won't prove me dishonest anywhere, so there won't be any quote of my dishonesty. Gary has a vested interest in twisting the results, so you won't show any twisted results either. Hiding the results where they do not suit him. So again, he has no evidence of that. He is very persuasive, as you of course know. How exactly am I very persuasive? I've been doing this for 10 years. Where's the evidence of that I'm getting anywhere with the scientific community? Nowhere. There's no evidence. Okay, if he has any cleverness, it is in his ability to construct well-rehearsed. I mean, is there any evidence that any of my videos could ever have been anything called rehearsed? I mean, it's just such a... These are the insane lies. I mean, they just lie. I don't even know how they get away with this. I mean, you know, there's no button in his head that says, gee, that's just going to make me look like a liar if I say something that stupid. Daily repeated flawed arguments that on the face of things appear to make sense. So again, and they can't on the face of things make a single rational argument where anything in this video is incorrect. I mean, I draw a diagram of lever and I say, please tell me where I made a mistake. Tell me where my understanding is wrong. Nobody will do that, and yet they'll just claim that somehow I'm cheating. Because I'm asking you to find the mistake I made. That's cheating. Oh, amazing. To anyone who hasn't been following all of his crafty twists again and turns on this on this since 18 months ago. I don't know if it's just 18 months, but whatever. It's been a couple of years on kinetic energy, primarily. But I really, I mean, because it's just so glaring. This is the smoking gun joke, you know, of the lie of physics. How it's just made out of shit. I mean, this is such a gross error. You know, it's not Benjamin Franklin's mistake. You know, Benjamin Franklin had to guess plus minus, which side is which. He didn't have enough information to make a good guess, so he made a bad guess. This isn't a bad guess. Anyway, but I really would end up telling you that vitriol life story to explain all of that, rather like each episode of Jabberwocky. Okay, so again, so he's so in love with his own little British programs. Apparently they had a TV series, Jabberwocky? I don't know. Whatever. The movie was watchable, but barely. Wasn't one of the best. Anyway, till the next time and such, this is just... Fuck. There is so much that's just, you know, ludicrously out of bounds. There's so many foul balls being thrown by people. Ugh, it's just amazing, all this cheating. So, till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. This has been a DraftPhysics.com video presentation. Till the next time and such.